You could say that a fascination with magic is part of America's national heritage. It's a kind of underground tradition, a history that's been with us from the beginning, hidden in plain sight. Now, writer and editor Mitch Horowitz has published the first full-scale history of occult and magical movements in America. It's called Occult America, the secret history of how mysticism shaped our nation. Horowitz told Anne Strangechamps,
"Well, it's really a tradition, a religious tradition, an intellectual tradition that's as old as Western culture. And essentially, occultism just means the belief in some kind of a hidden world or a parallel dimension that runs next to our own. We don't see it, but its powers can be felt upon us, can be felt through us."
So what was the hidden or secret body of knowledge that American practitioners of occult movements were exploring?
Well, they reached back into the Renaissance, they reached back into pre-Christian civilization, and they embraced a body of ideas that said there was this other world that ran parallel to our own and that we could reach through medium trances, through channeling, through some kind of clairvoyance or psychic activity, through some kind of divination. So, for example, you had American occultists in this country in the mid-19th century who were very aroused by the powers of the mind. They believed that the mind could heal the body, or that the mind could even shape outer circumstance. And you had some very original intellects and very powerful minds who were giving shape to this mental healing movement. And by the late 19th century, that movement took on different names. It became called New Thought. It became called Christian Science. There were different groups and congregations. All of them believed that the mind in some way was causative. Some people said the mind had a magic power. Others that it was an extension of the divine, of the creative power of God.
You know, what's remarkable is how contemporary some of those ideas are. I mean, think of The Secret or any number of current bestsellers all about the powers of the mind.
Absolutely. What we call the power of positive thinking now seems to be in the groundwater of our country. You find it everywhere. You find it among New Agers. You find it in evangelical congregations. You find it at business motivational seminars. Every American seems to walk around with this sense that motivational thinking is this positive force that can get things done. Some people take it in a very religious vein, others just in a very practical vein. But it wasn't always with us. That language and that concept really began to take shape in New England in the mid-19th century.
Let's talk about some of the people whose stories you uncovered in the book. You know, today, celebrity mediums and channelers go on talk shows or they do a lot of business on the New Age lecture circuit. You uncovered the story of America's first spirit channeler who began to preach almost literally at the founding of the nation in 1776.
Yes, she really became one of my favorite figures in the book, and I was astounded at how completely absent she is from works of religious history. Her name was Jemima Wilkinson, and she was a young woman at the dawn of the nation who grew up on a reasonably prosperous Quaker farm in Rhode Island. And in 1776, she got sick with typhus fever. And in October of that year, she went to her bed, and for more than 2 days, she fell into a coma, and she really was in a near lifeless state. And her family was certain that she was gone. People were dying at that time of a rash of typhus fever, and she was assumed to be one more casualty. After several days of just barely hanging on in this comatose state, Jemima jumped up from her bed, still sort of skinny and emaciated, but her cheeks were bright and flush with life, and she declared that Jemima Wilkinson had died and passed to the spirit world, and that the figure now standing before her family would answer to the name Public Universal Friend, and that she was now a spirit avatar and a channel of the divine spirit. So calling herself the Public Universal Friend, this is what today we might call a spirit medium or a spirit channeler, she began to travel around New England, around upstate New York, down to Philadelphia, and she began to preach. And for people who encountered Jemima, the experience was astounding because it was the first time that many of them had ever seen a woman deliver a sermon or a homily in public. And her message really was, in some respects, very ordinary, very reassuring. It was warmed over Quakerism. She would talk about the golden rule, the need to be tolerant and loving towards one's neighbor. She would talk about the importance of things like punctuality. It was not a radical message, but her claims about herself were radical, were supernatural. And many people were very aroused and excited by this because Americans wanted to feel that they were receiving some kind of divine message in the here and now, that they weren't just working with the Bible, that biblical prophets weren't just figures of yesterday, but that there could be some dispensation right here on American soil. So, in effect, the first female religious leader in America was a spirit medium.
And just to give a sense of how popular and influential spiritualism was in its heyday, no less a person than Abraham Lincoln attended a seance in the White House, didn't he?
Yes, he did. Lincoln held seances in the Civil War White House. His wife, the First Lady Mary Todd Lincoln, was a committed spiritualist, and this was a very serious interest of hers. It wasn't something that she just dabbled in. She had already lost two sons in childhood by the time the Lincolns began their first term in the White House. And like many people at that time, she sought solace at the seance table, and she apparently influenced her husband to hold at least two seances that we know of in the Civil War White House. And it seems to have been an event that Lincoln regarded more or less as kind of a joke or a novelty. Not everyone who practiced spiritualism necessarily took it seriously. To some people, it was a bit of a party game. But there are records of at least one other seance that was a more serious matter. There are memoirs that have a trance medium channeling political advice to Abraham Lincoln, in which spirits advised him, urged him to sign the Emancipation Proclamation. And again, it's less the supernatural claim than it is what it exposes about spiritualism that makes it so American. The spiritualists, they wanted to be seen as progressive. They wanted to be seen as agents of social progress. It made perfect sense that they would channel spirits that would tell Lincoln to put his signature to the greatest act of social reform since the country's founding.
Your history of occult America also includes stories of hucksters and charlatans. There's one particular really stands out, a guy named Frank Robinson.
Oh, yes. Well, actually, I happen to have a lot of affection for Frank Robinson. I think he was a sincere guy. He was a pharmacist who lived in the town of Moscow, Idaho. And in the late 1920s, he founded his own mail order religion called Psychiana. And it was basically a positive thinking religion. And he went around taking out newspaper and magazine advertisements. And for $10 or $20, you could get a batch of mail order lessons in what we today would call the power of positive thinking.
His first ad was totally brilliant. It was something like, "I've talked to God, and so can you."
Right. It's easy, he said. Yes. One of the things I loved about Robinson is he was so unembarrassed in making these claims. He once bragged to a wire service reporter that Psychiana guaranteed results or your money back. It's about the only money-back religion in the world. And he drove mainstream clergy crazy because this seemed absolute apostasy. But what Robinson was tapping into and the reason he became so successful is that Americans began to develop this expectation that religion should be practical, it should provide solutions, it should be therapeutic, it should be a healing force. And by the time Frank Robinson died in 1948, this idea was unstoppable. 4 years later, Norman Vincent Peale wrote The Power of Positive Thinking, and from that point forward, every branch of American religion, whether liberal or conservative, shared in this belief that religion ought to be some kind of a practical, therapeutic, healing force.
You know, looking back over the stories of the people and the movements you've recounted in this book, do you see it as the story of the foolishness and gullibility of Americans, or is it a story about a people of great spiritual imagination?
I really see it as the latter. America has been a great laboratory for religious experiment, and in a sense, what has come out of this laboratory has been so alluring and so interesting that America has exported it to the rest of the world. Really, in effect, spiritualism was the first religious movement that America exported abroad. You had seances going on in America in 1848, and then by the early 1850s, they're in London and they're in Paris. By the time the positive thinking movement began to really take flight in this country in the late 1800s, America had really become this great springboard for alternative religious ideas around the world. And what's important is that America keeps renewing the idea that people with radically different religious systems can live and work together successfully. And occult and esoteric movements have constantly pushed the margin of that idea, have constantly tested the boundaries of our society's religious tolerance. And again and again, the United States has been able to prove that religious tolerance works.
Mitch Horowitz is editor-in-chief of Torture Penguin Books, and he's the author of Occult America, The Secret History of How Mysticism Shaped Our Nation. Anne Strangeham spoke with him.